Hey, Heather here. Designed to empower individuals to be their best self, the Ron Kitchens Always Forward Leadership Podcast brings fresh understanding to the issues today's leaders are facing and equips them with new perspectives and resources to lead forward. Welcome to today's conversation with Ron Kitchens and Brad Lominick.
I am so glad you're joining us today for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. We have an incredible interview today with Patty Poppe. Patty is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Consumers Energy. She's one of the few female presidents of a major utility company in America, and she's my friend. And I'm so glad you can join us today for what's a pretty long interview with Patty talking about her career, her view as a leader, and I get to know her a lot as a person. So please join me as we get to know my friend, Patty Poppe.
So you're an industrial engineer. When you went to college, what did you want to do?
Well, I said, whatever happens, I'm not going to work in a factory. Well, then I spent the next 20 years of my life in factories, a car and power plants, which was kind of crazy, which, you know, is something just for people to consider that sometimes you rule things out and it could be something extraordinary. It was my first summer after my freshman year of college. The only summer job I could get was at a factory in Jackson, a Kelsey Hayes factory. I thought, oh, brother, well, I'll just do this, you know, this summer, and then I won't ever have to work in a factory again. Well, then I worked there, and I loved it. I loved making something every day. I loved the crazy people. The people were crazy, and there was always stuff happening, and I realized that that was my place. And so, you know, one word of advice I often give people is don't rule things out too early. Give it a try, and if you like it, keep doing it, and if you don't, do something else. And I really found that I loved operations. I loved the heartbeat of getting work done every day and the real relationships with people and building a team that wins is just it's just a lot of fun.
So what would you tell your 20-year-old self today?
I think I would tell her that she's going to be just fine and that coming from a small town, there were years that I thought that that was a disadvantage. Like when I started at Purdue and I was with all these incredibly brilliant people and they had gone to these great big high schools and had all these experiences that I had never had, I thought back then that that was a disadvantage. And now, in retrospect, it was such a great way to grow up and such a strong foundation that I wouldn't trade it for the world. But back then, I felt inadequate, like maybe I couldn't compete coming from where I came from. And it turned out that was not a problem.
So question not on our list, but I want to draw out of you is when you went to Purdue to major in engineering, there couldn't have been a lot of women in that program. Are we doing better today, getting more women in engineering to go through that? And what can we do to be better at that?
Yeah, it is a real challenge. Purdue, one of the reasons why I went to Purdue is they did have a really strong women in engineering program. And my dad really wanted me to be an engineer. And I really did not. I thought that sounded boring. And he kept pushing me. He had seven daughters. I was his seventh. And he had tried six times
before.
God
bless him.
I know.
God bless him.
Amen. And my mother for dealing with the 17 age girls. That was crazy. But so my dad's final attempt, you know, he had failed six times before to get an engineer out of the bunch.
So it was just guilt.
He was pulling out all the stops. And we got a little postcard from Purdue for a Women in Engineering Career Day, and it really did change my life. He said, let's go. I'm like, oh, God. And I went down there, and I met these incredible women who were smart and pretty and funny. And I thought, well, they don't seem so boring. Maybe I could be one of those people. That seems like, which is totally ludicrous now that I think back. But it inspired me that day, and it changed my trajectory. And I said, okay, let's give it a whirl. And the people at Purdue were really very rural, so it felt like home. You know, it's funny, Ann Arbor was so close to home, but it felt very urban. And so, you know, when I was deciding between Purdue and Michigan, and Purdue just felt like home for me, having grown up in Napoleon, because it's such a rural university setting. And the people were very nice. And so I would say this about the women in engineering. At that time, it was about 25% women. And there are certain majors, like biological engineering, biomedical engineering, that have a much higher percentage of women than others. Industrial engineering is often in the 35%. But the percentages in total have not grown that much. The total number of students has grown. The total number of engineers has grown. So the total number, the absolute number of women in engineering has grown, but the percentage hasn't. And I really think a lot about that. I have two daughters, and they're both studying engineering. You know, we feel like we did our part for society. But there's a reason why. One of them was Margaret, who's at University of Michigan. She was going to be an engineer from the beginning. She just was wired that way. But my daughter Elizabeth, her twin, was not as much. Though she had the same test scores, had the same capabilities, was good in math and science, but had a very similar reaction that I had been having when I was growing up, that it sounded boring. Well, we made them, both of them, join their first robotics high school team. And FIRST Robotics, if you're not familiar with it, is incredible. And it is fun. It is competitive. It's like an athletic environment for building robots that compete with one another. It's really incredible.
And Michigan leads the nation.
In the number of FIRST Robotics teams. The governor has really taken it under his wing. And so my daughters joined their team, and that was a game changer for my daughter, Elizabeth. Like, I had that event down at Purdue that changed my life. Being on her first robotic team really changed her life. And so that's a way, I think, that we can support and get more people in total to try engineering and not be intimidated by it. Consumer sponsors a couple teams, and we have one team, the Rosie the Riveters, and it's an all-girl team, and we're excited about that. They won a district championship here a couple weeks ago, and so we're excited about that. And then we have a co-ed team that we also sponsor. But we think as consumers energy, we know our future talent pipeline requires people with technical skills. And so getting immersed and really supporting FIRST Robotics, we think, is a great way to build that pipeline here in Michigan.
I think that's great. So let's jump rhythm a little bit, and we're going to go to a thing that we call rapid fire.
Yes, yes.
You got to be ready. You will not have time to read it.
All right.
You will not have time to read it.
So
the idea is the first word or two that comes to your head, and there is absolutely no prize at the end. So, favorite color?
Blue and green. That's the consumer's colors.
Favorite car?
My Cadillac ELR. It's electric.
Nice.
I love that.
Favorite book?
Future Builders, which is the story of our company's history, and I sincerely... Okay, sorry, it's supposed to be fast.
No, that's okay. Tell us why.
It really tells our company's history, and our founder, W.A. Foote, harnessed the great natural resources of Michigan, our rivers, and built dams, and was the first to transmit electricity long distances right to Kalamazoo from the Crotonville Dam. And that was a miracle of science, and our company has a tradition of innovation, and that book is such a great telling of it. And there's a funny line in the book that says, to be a vice president at Consumers, you either had to have red hair or have gone to Purdue.
Yeah.
I don't have red hair, but there's a strong relationship. So it's a great book. I really do. Yeah. I have it on my desk, and I love that book.
So what's your theme song or your on-deck song? What's that song that gets you pumped up?
Well, I did just say that Bon Jovi song, Who Says You Can't Go Home.
All right, we'll take it. Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
So what's your superpower?
You know, I think it might be, if this can be a superpower, cheerleading. My job is to fire people up and get them ready to go to do what we do best. And
that's a good superpower.
You know.
So favorite pizza topping?
Oh, I like the Supreme. I like it all. Load it up. Put it
all
on there.
You're going to tweet that. I like the Supreme. I like it all. So text or call?
Text, but not when I'm driving. I'm very, no texting while driving, but text definitely. Mm-hmm. I get a lot done with text.
Favorite place to work? Favorite space?
We built a house in Grass Lake right next door to my sister, next door to my dad, right where I grew up. And I have a little office I built in that house that looks out on Wolf Lake. And there's no doubt on a Saturday or sometimes Friday, sometimes when things really work out, I get to work from my office at home on Fridays, and I just love it. It's a beautiful place.
That does sound nice. Favorite band?
AC/DC.
Nice. We're there together.
Yeah, we love it. I have a funny, just a quick AC/DC story. So I grew up on this Wolf Lake, and it's, you know, everybody, it's country. It's nothing fancy happens at Wolf Lake. We're very down to earth. And we grew up learning to water ski on a fishing boat, aluminum fishing boats. And like, you can't, it's hard to start on one behind an aluminum fishing boat. But there was a time, finally, when we bought the ski boat. And so we had our new Mastercraft, which for us was just like we had died and gone to heaven. And our first run we were backing out of the dock, and we turned on Hell's Bells. And that song, you're backing out, it was a little foggy, we're backing out at 7 a.m., and all of a sudden, bong, bong. We're like, oh, yeah. Wait, you know, we have arrived. Like, that was like a moment. Like, that's, things have turned out just fine for us. Yeah, that was good stuff. Mm.
Favorite movie?
Little Women. Every Thanksgiving, my daughters and my nieces, you know, so my dad had these seven daughters, and then he had eight granddaughters, no boys. We're like the Black Widows. I don't know. We're just, you got to be a tough guy to stick around with this crowd. But all us girls pile in, and we watch Little Women every year, and it's just beautiful.
That sounds awesome. So what would the title of your biography be?
Maybe Patty Poppy Party Planner.
Party planner.
That was one of my titles.
Yeah, that's
for years because I love to plan a good party and it really gets people fired up. And when we do our work, we're planning our work. And if people can have fun while they're working, there is something to it. And it's possible. Work does not need to be drudgery. And so by really being human, being fun, I heard a speaker down at Purdue once. He had been very successful. He had donated a building to the university and he said one of his most important leadership attributes was that he was fun. And I think that there's some real truth in that. Sometimes when you're growing in your career, you think you have to be, you know, all business all the time. And the reality is we're all people. And you can have fun while you're delivering the mail. Like, you know, you can do great work and have a good time while you're doing that. And I really think that fun is an important attribute in leading teams.
I think that's great. Those of you who follow me on Facebook, here, I'll do a commercial for my Facebook and Twitter, but I posted this weekend, I was in Dallas, and I get into an Uber, and I have the world's greatest Uber driver.
Oh my gosh.
If you haven't seen it, you gotta watch this. This guy, so it was about a 20-minute ride. He had 20 minutes of pre-recorded music that he sang along to, all songs that he had written.
Oh, wow.
And he's amazing. So go look at this thing. You want to talk about great customer service? I never throw an extra tip at the Uber driver. I won't tell you how much I paid this guy.
That's awesome.
But incredible. But he was having fun. And he said, you know, I'm the inspirational transportation guy who's lifting you up as you go through life.
That's awesome.
And it was one of the great rides. So I challenge you to go look at that.
That's
it was
great.
Really cool. You mentioned water skiing. So what life lessons did you learn water skiing, either on the back of the aluminum boat or
that thing? You got to hang on.
Yeah.
When
you don't have the power, you got to hang on.
That's right. That's a good one. I'm going to add that to my repertoire. One of the things that I've learned, particularly in this job, is that as a leader, we do throw a wake, you know, and that wake has reverberations well beyond the moment that you're behind the boat. And so that wake can be good and it can be bad. And you have to decide what kind of wake are you going to throw. And that's one of the things that surprised me about this role. You know, it's funny. I had all sorts of great ideas when I was running operations. But when you're the CEO and you have a great idea, stuff happens. And so I've had to learn to, I sometimes feel like that girl in the Frozen movie, you know, who points and everything freezes. Like, sometimes that happens. And I don't mean for it to happen. And so I keep my hands tucked in my pockets. But making sure that when you really ask your team for something, that you really need it. That it really is going to be a difference maker. And when you're leading a group of people, helping them deliver what they're trying to deliver is a choice that you make as a leader to be a servant of the team that you're leading. And I think that, you know, skiing behind that boat, I realize that I have a big impact, but I have to really work to channel that for good.
That's great advice for all of us, regardless of what our role is. Because, you know, my grandfather who raised me, I grew up on a small river, and he would say, you got to make sure your wake doesn't create erosion.
That's good.
And that was one of those lessons that, and
that
was really a leadership lesson he was teaching me
in
doing that. So, no,
That's
I really
awesome.
Appreciate that. So, let's have a little fun. What role has luck played in your success?
I think there is luck involved. You know, that the luck of Terry having gone to my high school and us having the same job, you know, that was crazy. bumping into my friend right before we were going to leave for Korea. I mean, I think there was some luck in that. But then I think we took it. You know, we took that luck and did something with it. And sometimes those opportunities happen for you, and you just have to take that leap of faith and make it something. So.
No, I think that's right. We look at, I don't remember the number now, but something like 10% of all winning lottery tickets are never cashed.
Oh, my goodness.
People have the luck, yeah, and then they forget to cash the ticket. And I think that's what we hear from you is, you know, the luck came, but I was prepared.
Yeah.
I'd done the work, and I took the opportunity.
Yeah, you know, my husband and I do talk about that. Sometimes I do have to pinch myself. Like, I cannot believe that I have this job, and it's such an awesome company and amazing people, and I love it so much. And my husband reminds me. He said, you know, Patty, you did work really hard. Like, don't forget that for many, 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 many years, you got up at 4:30 every day, and you went into the plant, and you did the hard work and took the assignments that other people wouldn't take. And, you know, third shift at the Lordstown Assembly Plant, there were some crazy people at that place, you know. It was a little crazy. And, you know, you did the hard work that prepared you for a time such as this. And so I do think this whole idea for people, for all of us, as we're pursuing our careers, to take the tough assignments, you know, do the hard stuff. There's no easy way to get. If you have a destination in mind for your career, you got to work it, and you got to really put in the time and the effort and do whatever job you have at any given time better than anyone has done it before. And I feel like I was lucky that people gave me opportunities, but then I delivered. You know, they would open the door, but then I would complete the job. And I think sometimes I see people trying to get the opportunity, but maybe don't want to do the hard work that's required to actually do it well.
Kind of wish we were done with the interview, because that would have been an awesome place to finish. Do the hard work. If you don't get anything else out of today, that's gold. Find the opportunity, work the third shift, do the hard work. That's absolutely gold. You talked about mentors earlier, yeah, when you were talking about going to Korea. What role have mentors played in your life, and what responsibility do you or we hold to be mentors?
I definitely have had some great mentors and sponsors. And so I think there's a distinction between a mentor and a sponsor.
Please talk about those differences.
So a mentor, in my experience, has been someone who's given good advice and, you know, really pushes to make you be your best. A sponsor is someone who gives you career opportunities. And sometimes those are the same person, and sometimes they're not. I know there was a time I was working for DTE, and I had hired in at DTE as a continuous improvement leader, and I had heard through the rumor mill that I was going to be named power plant director for these five plants. And I really felt like I had already done that. Like, I had spent all my career in plants. I was ready for something different. And I wasn't too excited about the fact that I was going to run these power plants. And truly, by the grace of God, I got a phone call from a friend of mine out of the blue that night on my way home from work. I knew the next day the boss was going to give me this opportunity. And I had gotten myself all spun up. I was going to decline that opportunity. And my friend Zara called me. She had been the woman actually who hired me at GM 15 years earlier, and she has been a mentor of mine over the years. And she just out of the blue called me that night, like complete serendipity, luck. And she said, Patty, I told her the whole thing, I'm not going to take this job, la, la, la. And she said, Patty, do you think they've ever had an outsider run their power plants? And I had been at the company maybe like 6 months. I was like, oh. I thought about who was running. I'm like, no, I don't think so. Do you think they've ever had a woman run their power plants? I was like, no. And she said, maybe they think this is a big deal. I was like, oh, shoot. Grace of God there. I took that job, and it was awesome. It was awesome. I learned about our industry, boots on the ground with the real people who make electricity. There is nothing more spectacular than that. And what a miss it would have been if I had not taken that opportunity. So she really was critical. That was a mentor. She had nothing to do with my job assignment. She was a mentor. I had other people in my career who were sponsors, who opened doors for me. The advice that I got from a career trajectory, and I just offer this to all of you, that if you have a destination in mind, You do have to stick to the path. And there were times when I wanted to go do something different. Operations is hard, that I was ready, like, couldn't I do a marketing job? That sounds so much better. And my mentors were like, no, sorry, you need to stick to the path. You're an operations person, you've got an operations career path. And there was a time that one of my mentors, I had two job offers. I was at GM, this was early in my career, and one was to be a launch manager, and it's kind of funny now, I was going to be working for Mary Barra, who I've known my whole career, and who's the CEO of GM now. But she was going to have me come be a launch manager, and my plant manager said, but Patty, you haven't been a first-line supervisor yet. And I'm going to tell you, if you want to be a plant manager someday, which I did, you should not skip that job. So I was turning down a promotion with a company car, working for this great woman, doing really cool stuff, to go be a first-line supervisor on second shift in the trim shop. Like, blah, it was awful. And first-line supervision, it's like the worst job in the universe. All you first-line supervisors in the house, God bless you. You'll get through it. It's really important. It's so important. And so what great advice he gave me. And I took his advice. And it was hard to turn down that company car, let me tell you. Driving in the plant at 4 o'clock in the morning or going in the afternoon, 4 o'clock at night. I was like, oh, geez, that company car would be a lot more comfortable than this old car of mine. But it was one of the most important career decisions that I made because it really gave me the stripes and the credibility for the real work. I had the experience, and no one can take the real experience from you. And so those mentors really played a role like that for me.
What responsibility do you feel to be a mentor?
Yeah, I do. There's informal mentoring, like even like something like this, you know, that this is a great opportunity for me to share some of my experiences with all of you. That's an informal kind of mentoring. I have other people that I've mentored through the years that I just feel like it's paying it forward, you know, that there's an obligation to really help people achieve their dreams. And I actually find great fulfillment in being able to do that.
No, as do I. What renews you?
Well, I will say being with people renews me. I'm one of those people. So throwing a big party or being out in the field with our crews, that renews me. I love that. There are times, a couple times a year, where I do need to just relax and read. I do love to read, and so reading is something that does renew me.
That's awesome. You know, failure is one of those things that a lot of leaders hide, you know, and I'm no different than anybody else here, but where is an area or a time when failure affected your leadership, good or bad?
You gave me this question in advance, and so I was thinking about when was a big failure? Well, and one came to mind that I think is really funny now. This is a funny story. So I was a freshman in high school and talked my classmates into doing a fundraiser to sell light bulbs. Now, how was that for a premonition of the future? So we were going to sell light bulbs, and we did. We sold a lot of light bulbs. And that was very, like, that's bizarre, really. Why did I come up with that idea? But people needed light bulbs, so it seemed smart to me. And then they all got stolen. This is terrible. They got stolen from the school. We sold all these light bulbs. They're all in the storage room, and then they were gone. Now, let me tell you, my little freshman class was not very happy about that. They were very disappointed in my leadership that we had this kooky idea and then they all got stolen and we were in the hole. You know, we were trying to raise money for our prom, you know, junior year, and we were in the hole. And it's funny now. Of course, it was not funny at the time. And I think just the lesson in it is that you just have to get back on the horse, you know, and we figured out something else we had to do to make the money and make up for that horrible experience. And it is funny now to me that, you know, I thought about selling light bulbs back then.
So did we ever figure out where the light bulbs went?
No, I don't. And, you know, all I can say is somebody must have needed them. You know, like, I don't know. That's all. They must have needed them more
Broadway
than we did.
Broadway in New York?
Yeah. What would you do with all those light bulbs? It was so terrible.
There's a barn somewhere that somebody wanders out to every week and gets a light bulb.
But, you know, the funny thing is, right, I could have said to myself, well, I'm not meant to be a leader, and I shouldn't try, and, you know, I'm a disaster. But I didn't, you know, and I did have to regain my respect with my classmates. But, you know, just because you have a mistake doesn't mean that you don't get back up there. And people do forgive. Like, I mean, it was fine. It was fine. But it's, I think about different times when you disappoint or you don't make what you were hoping to achieve, and you just have to try again. You just have to try again and take that for the lesson that it is.
You know, I'm fascinated by something that you said with your twins. They're twins, so a lot of us, now, I don't know if anybody in this room is a twin, but all of us that aren't think that they're essentially the same. They're symbiotic. But talking about them being different, how's that changed how you manage people? Because it dawns on me that it would be natural to try to parent them the same. Does that change how you manage talent and people?
Yeah, I mean, I think the lesson in that, I have genetically identical twins. You know, they are genetically identical, and they are different people. And so for them, you know, recognition that each of us who leads a team of people, every person has their own individual preferences and needs. And there's, you know, that book, Strengths Finder? Mm-hmm. I think that is a really awesome way to think about it when you're leading people to find their strengths and let them use them more often and identify those strengths in the team that you lead. That is so important, as opposed to saying, look, this is the job you're in. So for example, my assistant is a saint. Sandy Buckland is amazing. But believe it or not, she's not a detail-oriented. She's detail-oriented enough, but she loves to fix things, improve things, coordinate things. And she and I were just having this conversation that it would be wrong for me to force her into, you know, all the details. She's got to work with our team to make sure somebody has the details, but she has all these strengths that she can offer to the group, and she's leading all the other executive assistants in this team building and getting them to be their best, which makes my job easier. And so to pigeonhole someone who's in a job that works for you on your team to say, okay, this is how the only way this job can be done, every job can be done a different way, and to make sure that the people that are in those roles are in a position to use their strengths and then crutch the weaknesses, crutch the things that don't match up with the job requirement.
I think that's dead on. I think it's something that we as leaders have to learn and remember, because we tend to think that everybody who follows us ought to do it the way we did it.
Exactly.
Or that we want our aspirations for them.
Yeah.
And that they're different people with different dreams, with
and if
needs,
you can,
wants, and desires.
If you can name what the strengths are and what the weaknesses are, that takes something to really be observant and to know your team and know when are they at their best and when are they not. Then you can crutch the areas where they're not at their best and figure out how to make the team function in its total. It's completely possible.
Absolutely.
And it's a fun way to lead.
We use a balanced portfolio. We have a spreadsheet. And we've identified what are those strengths that we need as an organization.
That's
what are
awesome.
The things that we don't really have to have? And then so when we add people to the team, we're looking at enhancing the strengths of the organization. And it may not be a strength they have to have for their job, but it helps strengthen the whole organization.
Exactly.
So we bring people on to strengthen the whole portfolio.
That's cool.
And then the whole team shares it. So everyone on the team knows what the portfolio is and knows what everybody's strengths are.
Yeah.
So then they can go to somebody and say, you know, this isn't my talent. It's not my gift.
Right.
And I know it's yours.
Exactly.
Work me through this, or can we change these responsibilities so we're both working in those things that gives us energy?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. So who is the best teacher you ever had? We love teachers at Southwest Michigan First.
I had two teachers in high school who really made a huge difference for me. One was Anita Johnston. She was my math teacher. And having gone to this little school, Napoleon, and
where you can wear
suspenders
to get pie.
Boots. She told me something I'll never forget. I probably was a junior or senior, and she looked me in the face and she said, Patty, don't let anyone ever tell you there's something you can't do. Just don't let anyone ever tell you that. And that stuck with me. That stuck with me for a good long time. She really opened up my mind to not thinking small. But then my other favorite teacher, Alyssa Alden, Terry knows her well. She was my speech coach and forensics coach in high school. And forensics was a really important skill set for me. Like, to learn to public speak has turned out to be such an incredibly important skill And to get an early start on it in high school was someone who was a blast. She was just a great teacher and a great coach. That made a big difference in my life. I have a good girlfriend. We went to Purdue together. She's a rock star. She's a partner at Deloitte in Chicago, and she's just amazing, a mechanical engineer. And she and I both agree our professional success is based upon our technical competence for sure, but our ability to speak in public has been a huge contributor to my own professional success and my friend's success. And so when I think back to Alyssa Alden at Napoleon High School, who taught me how to speak in front of a group, that was pretty important.
No, I think it is. I read recently that beyond technical competence, that was the number one skill that CEOs listed as something they wish they were better at, or the thing that they thought that was their success.
Yeah.
Was direct correlation. Yeah. Of course, the report also said that it's the number one fear for people is public speaking, and number two is dying. So people Jeez. Would rather be the body in the box than give the eulogy.
I
don't quite get that clearly, but that's that's what the data tells us.
That's crazy.
So what are the most common questions that people ask you day to day?
I think the question that I often get asked is the question about work-life balance. And I have a point of view about this subject, so I appreciate the opportunity to share my point of view about this. A lot of times people say, well, how do you make sure that you have equal balance? And that's what they're implying with the question. And I say, forget about that. And now let me finish my thought, because at first people say, oh, here's my thinking on this. We each have a finite amount of time. And to spend and imbalance our lives around the things we love the most is the real opportunity. And so when I think about when people try and say, well, work and life and work-life balance, that implies that when you're working, you're not living, and that you're only happy when you're off the job. That's not true. Make sure you design your work to be fulfilling so that it's as much fun as your non-work. And so that I say, imbalance your life. Let the scale drop to the floor for the things that you love the most, but it takes something to know what you love the most. And you really have to be curious and self-observant to determine, when am I at my best? When am I happiest? What am I doing in those times? What are my hobbies, especially young people? Discretionary time, what are you doing in your discretionary time, and how do you parlay that into a career? You know, part of what I love about my job, I do enjoy leading teams. I do enjoy public policy, and it's a big part of my role. I do enjoy public speaking and reaching out with people. And so my life is dramatically imbalanced to the things that I love doing the most. My family time and my work time are both joyful. And so I don't strive to have less of one. I want to have more of both. And so it's sort of an abundance mindset. And so I encourage you to kind of rethink the conversation around work-life balance, like there's some equilibrium that will make you happy. You'll be happy when you're doing what you love to do more often.
Thank you for all showing up. This is an investment. Whether you made the decision yourself to invest in coming here, wrote that check, or gave your credit card number to be here, or whether your employer, your boss did that, you made a conscious decision to invest in yourself, to be here, to grow yourself. Now, I'm selfish because I know no community can succeed unless leaders get better. So I want this community, this region to be incredible. So I'm selfishly up here because I know you have to get better for all of us to get better. So it's my job to thank you, to thank your employers. Thank whoever made those decisions for you to be here this morning and invest in yourself. I'm so grateful for that. And then my third job is to thank Patty for being here. There's a lot of places she could be. There's incredible demand on her time. But to come here and share with us this incredible level of leadership, to let us see behind the boardroom doors a little bit, and to know if we take the tough jobs, if we work harder than people think is sane, and then we take advantage of the opportunities that are given to us, whether we believe it's God-given or whether it's just dumb luck, but you still got to step through the door when the door opens. If you learn nothing else today, I hope you take that away. And Patty, thanks for being our friend.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Good job, Ron.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Still listening? Thank you for joining us. One thing I'm passionate about is elevating leaders. You know, we get a lot of requests at the podcast, whether it's online, direct at ronkitchens.com or through the social media outlets, about opportunities for me to come speak on leadership and organizational excellence and community growth. So if you're hosting an event or a conference and you'd be interested in me or any of the speakers that you hear on the Always Forward Leadership podcast, give us a shout out. You can find more information at ronkitchens.com.
Thanks for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership podcast. We hope today's insights will help you develop into the leader you dream to be. To subscribe to Ron's blog or to submit a question for Ron to discuss in a future podcast, visit ronkitchens.com or tweet him at ronkitchens.